As we approach the end of 2023, we've created an amazing gift for you. This episode is one of the first in a series of special segments from some of our episodes about the topics of career, parenting, and spirituality. The purpose of this podcast from the beginning has always been to bring you the wisdom of mentors to be able to help you learn from their journeys and their mindset and their perspectives and their purpose to be able to create a better life for yourself. So this series is yet another tool for you in that exact same direction. So get ready, listen in, take some notes, and identify for yourself what do you want to change in your life in order to make your life even better for you. Let's begin. Here's Josh Comrie from episode one.
You first look to try and work out which of these options am I going to least regret? And it sounds like what you already say is that not making the decision myself and leaving it too long until it ends up in someone else's hands will be the one that I'm going to regret every single time. And, and then you go beyond that and you say, well, let me try and see this from everyone's perspective. And just to make sure you've got everyone's perspective, you'll start asking for some unbiased perspective as well. You'll obviously engage with the people who are going to be affected, but then talk to those who aren't as affected, who aren't affected at all, such as mentors and advisors. And then that final moment of making that decision, how do you do that?
Look inside yourself. Yeah, look inside yourself. And once you have all of that data, that information, all of those perspectives, look inside yourself and go, the least regret is, whilst it's a little bit glib, the other side of that is to go, what's the decision that I can live with for the rest of my life, knowing that I will need to refer back to this decision in the future, similar or different decisions that I need to make, and go, yeah, I did the best with what I had, and I honored the most people in the best way possible.
Okay. So is that a framework that you often use? Like, look towards the end of your life and you look back. What are you grateful for? What are you glad that you've done? What decisions do you wish that you would have made differently? Is that a framework you often use?
Tony Robbins refers to it as rocking chair moments.
Yes.
And so it's the, living a full life. I was talking about happiness before. And one of the considerations that someone introduced me to, a therapist that I spent some time with in my 30s, dealing with some things, was not happiness, but satisfaction. And satisfaction is a retrospective thing. It's something that you can only do by looking back upon it. And so by casting myself forward to a moment in the future, be that rocking chair moment, and go, is this something that I'll be satisfied with and or proud of? I struggle with the word pride, by the way, because I think it's really appropriate for us to feel pride for someone else, but it's sometimes inappropriate for us to feel it for ourselves. But if you imagine a situation where you're an octogenarian, for example, in your 80s, hope to be there with great health and with great great clarity of mind, to then look back and go, did I do all the right things by the right people along the way?
Here's Ben McAvoy from episode 7.
And so tell me a little bit more about how you're working so hard to achieve all this stuff. You went from your engineering, you decided that's not where you wanted to go. You went across to accounting and finance, and you eventually, you climbed up pretty high in Lendlease, and you eventually decided that's not where I want to stay. What made you decide to move?
Yeah, it's because of my career change. I essentially looked around at my peers. And I guess when you get to a certain point in your career, it's the tip of the pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. There's not 50 executive roles. There's only 3. And the pool below that I was in, so let's say there was 20 of my peers in Australia. 19 of them had been an accountant their whole career. So let's say 15 or even more, maybe 20 years. And most of them had been at Lendlease for the whole of their career. And I was this sort of, I'd only just been an accountant or just made the professional change. And I just felt like if I wanted to make a positive step, to make the next step, then it was going to be a very long wait for me to sit in that pool. And I guess that was when an opportunity came for me to move, you know, within the property sector and to another property company. But then I guess at that next step, at the next senior role, it was something that I guess I just leaned into, even though, like I say, it was pretty scary at the time going across there. So it was really just an acknowledgement that there was, you know, I was in a big ocean, or maybe the ocean was getting smaller and the fish around me were pretty big. And I think because I had a unique skill set as well, I had that engineering project management piece and I had the construction finance piece. So I guess what I was looking for was going somewhere where they would value that. So somewhere where they wanted and needed and valued that skill set. And then also on the flip side, somewhere where I felt like I could add value, somewhere where I could use those skill sets, you know, to the advantage of the business that I was going into.
So was that one of the first times where you really made that decision out of going towards what you want and doing what's right
100%,
and not doing what you regret?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll never forget it. It was such a big thing for me because I had to buy a suit because, you know, I'd worked in a construction company for 15 years. I'd never worn a suit. So I had to, you know, I had to go and buy a suit. I had to dress differently. I hadn't done a resume for 15 years. I had to do a resume. I had to, you know, find people to be my references. And all of that was like really daunting for me because I just had not done it before. And I know that sounds quite silly, but, you know, if you've never had to, my job interview to get my job out of university, I really had, you know, between my third and my fourth year. And then once I was in the cadet program, I never really had to do another job interview again. So that was, 100% the first time where I really saw something that was scared the living bejesus out of me. But I knew I was moving for the right reasons, or I knew I was moving towards it for the right reasons, and I did it anyway. And that was, and maybe it's luck that it turned out and it worked well. There's always that selection bias in life, but it was definitely the first time that I intentionally kind of made that decision.
Here's David Musumeci, episode 9.
Another opportunity would come through. It'd be like, hey, there's an opportunity right with so-and-so. Oh, well, okay, let's do that. You know, it's not like you're ever looking at the whole picture. You're just looking what's in front of you. I think that when you do that, it just keeps rolling on from there. And then the next thing you know, it's like another year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you end up where you are, I guess.
Is that something consistent for you as well? Like you've always stayed ready for any opportunities that are coming up?
Oh, yeah, always taking every opportunity. That was definitely key to our success. Like we jumped on it, like feet first. Yeah, like if we had to spend, you know, 24 hours, if we had to not have any sleep working on something to make it happen, we'd do that. Yeah, like you give up whatever's going on to get involved. So, there's many times where I've, you know, had many sleepless nights working around the clock, especially when I was younger. There was times where, I mean, if you ask my wife, like I'd come home at 4 o'clock in the morning after I'd written a song and just shove headphones in her ears while she's half asleep and she'd go to work next morning. She wasn't happy about that, but I was all excited because, you know, I'm like got all this adrenaline running through me. And that's happened many times. And that sometimes you get a phone call, you know, can you be in the studio now? And you just go, yep, sweet. And you just drop everything, go and do the session. Yeah, we worked really hard in the beginning. Like we still do now, but it's different, a bit different now, a bit more balanced now, I guess.
What's the difference?
Bit more life balance now. I think, you know, being a bit older, now I'm married, I have other interests and hobbies and things that kind of went by the wayside in the beginning, which is also can be a bad thing. Like I felt like really right in the beginning when it was just music, but that's all I live for, that made things a little bit harder when, say, opportunities were lost. So because your whole life was riding on that, you took it a little bit harder. And so it was like if the song didn't get used or whatever, it'd be so much harder to deal with because you're just banking on that. Whereas if you have other things in your life and you create a little bit more balance, which I learned a bit later, A, you deal with those situations a lot better, and B, you actually have more to write about. So, you know, like if you don't fall in love, if you don't have failed relationships, if you don't have all these things, like regular, like life experiences, how are you supposed to write about them really? You know, so it all kind of plays a part. I think it's good to be focused and to work really hard, but also make sure you maintain that life balance. You know, that's one thing. That's the difference now. I definitely have way more balance now than I did before.
Here's Nathan Barantakiri from episode 10.
Now, when I reflect on what you shared about growth is on the other side of pain, it doesn't necessarily have to be your pain that the growth is on the other side of, right? You can have growth on the back of someone else's pain.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. And so, hey, look, if the alternative was me going through that pain and me getting into a partnership that failed and having to, you know, deal with the consequences of doing that, but I don't because they've done that, wow. That's why, you know, I treat it with the respect that it deserves.
Right. And so that's interesting, right? Because a lot of people, when they're looking at their future journey, and they've got this mantra of, like, you know, no pain, no gain. I've got to have this. I've got to be able to go through these tough times and hustle and grind in order to get the best outcome.
Yeah.
They often don't realize that pain isn't a prerequisite. You don't have to have pain. It sounds like the way that you're describing it is that pain, whenever you have it, will lead to growth, but it doesn't mean that you seek it out.
Prepared for pain.
Prepared for pain.
If that's the best solution, some things you just have to live. You've got to live it in your skin. It's got to be in your skin. Even the best person, you trust them. It's like, great, thank you for preparing me. I've still got to kind of walk. I've got to walk through that valley myself. So I think it just depends on the nature of the thing. But yeah, I mean, fundamentally, you're right. It doesn't have to be your pain, but you've got to be prepared to. What I wouldn't say respect, or I wouldn't capture my definition of success, is where you can achieve the same things by doing it entirely through other people's pain. that doesn't really kind of align with my value system.
So why not, right? Because you've had a whole lot of pain yourself, and you're there supporting them when they're going through challenging times, and you can help them avoid pain. Like, isn't that just mutually beneficial? Where if you could go through something and not have any pain at all, but you're growing off the back of all these other people's pain, and they're only sharing that with you because you're sharing with them from past pain that you've experienced.
Yeah. Look, I would say I would agree with you to the extent that it's possible.
Right.
But I think, you know, it isn't always possible to kind of hack life to quite that extent. I also think that there's a bit for me around, if you always seek that short, smart path at someone else's, you know, pain expense, how might that not serve you in that moment when you really do need to tread that path yourself? Or will you simply keep looking for someone to shorten path and lighten your load? Because I just don't, that's just not how it works. And I think, you know, how would you decide if you were that person? How would you decide, this is one of those moments, I'm going to walk this myself, or I'm just going to keep looking until I can find some schmuck who will share their life experience, even though I may not yet deserve it because I don't really know them that well, you know?
Yeah. So how do you decide?
Well, I haven't needed to, because right. I've put myself through that pain first. So if I kind of look at it, and I kind of alluded to it before, I certainly took the kind of the harder path to get to where I am. I probably could have shortcutted things by applying these kinds of approaches or principles around things. I wouldn't do it any other way. But again, that's my kind of, I feel like I've, you know, it's interesting. I feel like I deserve what I have as a consequence of treading that path and going through all of that pain and adversity. I've earned the right to, you know, what it is that I've achieved.
Here's Damon Burden from episode 13.
When I made the leap of faith, it was when I realized I could still pay my bills. And so I wasn't making a ton of money by any means. What it was I had my day job that was taking up 80% of my time, but it was probably paying 50 to 55% of my income. And the other half was coming from the side hustle that was only taking up 20% of my time. So when those, when the side hustle incrementally increased to the point where I could pay my bills. And so at the point at that time, I was probably 24 or 25 years old, something like that. And so I had a mortgage, I had a car payment, didn't have kids yet. So I, by doing the math, I could go, okay, if I eliminate the day job, which is half of my income, can I still pay the mortgage and the car payments and food and insurance and things like that? Yes. Will I be rich? Definitely not. I'm actually going to lose money, but I still have those needs met. And in doing that, I was able to replace the day job, free up that time, which allowed me to focus on the side hustle, which was prioritizing my clients. I was able to get that income back in, if I remember right, I mean, it was probably like 2 to 3 months. It wasn't a terribly long time because I was able to then focus. So then for a year or two after that, it was just me because it was cool to not have a ton of responsibilities outside of just those handful of clients. It was great to have the freedom of time. It was at the time my wife worked in a hospital, and so she'd get up at 3 a.m., go to work at 4. And so why not get up at 3 a.m.? I'm not doing anything else. So I got up at 3 and then I would work from like 4 to 9. And earlier I joked about having a beer because 9 was like midday for me. And so sometimes I'd be like, why not have a beer? And so it, like, I joke about that now because I don't really drink nowadays. But back then it was like, you know, take from what I like and don't like from that opportunity. And then after a year or two, it was okay. The funds run its course as being a solopreneur. Now let's put on our big boy pants and see what we can do with this. And so at that time, then I started bringing on a couple of remote team members and then did that for probably another year or two, because here's where I talk about dating the phases. I hadn't ever managed other people. I had managed people in a traditional job, but I hadn't ever had anybody on payroll under my own responsibility before. And so that was something that I wanted to learn. And I didn't want to overwhelm myself by going from 0 to 50 employees or going from 5 clients to 50 clients. And so I gave myself the freedom to go through those processes and learn from them. And then that in retrospect has made all the other phases that followed it way more sustainable. So, you know, one way to kind of summarize that is there's definitely a lot of people that made way more money a lot faster than I did. But a big chunk of them also lost that money because they couldn't sustain it. They may have made $1 million before me, but I've never lost my $1 million, right? And so I was able to go through those phases. And so then after the commit me, that second phase, I'm kind of generalizing here of having a handful of team members, then it was like, okay, well now how do we scale fulfillment? So that's when I got really heavy into documenting processes. And documenting processes is amazing, and we all hear it, and we all know it. Standard operating procedures, it's the best thing ever. But until you actually do it and can quantify the benefits of it, it's a whole different conversation. So doing that absolutely sucked, though. It took 2 or 3 hours every other day for a year to go through all the possible different situations. So what I do is search engine marketing. And with that, we do a lot of web design. So then I had to go, okay, what about all the wild card situations? What about all the dynamic situations? Does this website run on platform A or platform B? Is it a commerce website or a non-commerce website? Is it hosted at a good place or a bad place? So there's all these different combinations of scenarios that we could be working with on a client. And when I was documenting the processes, I never wanted to do it again other than needing to update things as processes change. But I didn't want to finish it and go, I kind of half-assed that one part. Now I got to go back and do it. So I really took my time to go through all those processes. And it's now it's the best thing ever because I can literally launch a new client's account with a 200-point checklist of tasks with perfect quality control in 30 seconds. I can go in and I can pick which type of project it is. Is it an SEO project? And is it commerce or non-commerce? Hit go. And it's going to kick out all the fine detailed tasks to all the individual responsible team members, all with staggered due dates and deadlines. And then from there, because I went so granular on the documentation, now the team can carry the majority of the production while I focus on management and scaling the team.
Here's Vin Jain, episode 15. Was that an easy transition from you, from being a magician to being a keynote speaker?
Definitely not. It was hard for many reasons. One of the main reasons I remember it was hard was because you have to break a lot of molds. For example, when I transitioned from now a magician into I want to be a keynote speaker, clients would say, "Oh, Vin, sorry, we already got after dinner entertainment." Right, so they kind of funneled you into this corner of, oh, you're a magician. Oh, of course. Okay, well, after dinner entertainment. Sorry, we've already got someone for that. We've got a comedian coming in. So people thought that being a magician, I think a lot of people perceive that, oh, being a magician, oh, that must be so good for you. It's what a great competitive edge. What a great unique value proposition. It wasn't like that at all. Even worse, they kind of put a fee cap on me as well. They kind of went, oh, the magician, you can't charge 10 grand as a magician. Look, we've got a $2,500 budget for entertainment. So there were fee barriers, there were psychological barriers, there was, you know, barriers in terms of where they would slot me for the event. So then I had to make a very big decision. I had to completely clean up my blueprint online. I had to close down my website of me offering my magic services. I removed a whole bunch of videos on YouTube of me doing close-up magic and roving magic as a service. And that was really hard because I'd built up a really good business by that point, just doing close-up magic. I mean, I built this wonderful business where every weekend I booked multiple events where I was being paid like $1,500 to do roving magic for a couple of hours. So I had this really nice, wonderful business. But it's like that metaphor in the world of, you know, swinging through jungles as Tarzan. You've got to let go of one branch before you can catch the next one. You can't kind of keep hanging onto this branch and then try to catch the next one. So I had to let my branch go that I got so comfortable with. And that was the scariest thing I've ever done. But that was fantastic because it worked. Right? It took a bit of time. You know, when you let go of this vine, there is a moment when you're in the air and there are no vines that you're hanging onto. That moment for me lasted 6 months. 6 months before things started to kind of take traction. But I had to just completely kill off the other brand. I had to completely get rid of it because it was impacting the future that I wanted to create. And that was really hard.
Here's Ben Selkeld from episode 17.
And I believed all I needed to do was earn a certain amount of money or create a business that was going to earn a certain amount of money, sell it. And hey, I'm successful. I'm happy. I'm fulfilled. I can live my life out the ways that I think I need to live it out. It came a sort of point in time where, you know, even off, as you said there before, you know, like there was some financial success through some of the businesses that I'd created, especially with Beastbox and, you know, being able to sell it. However, just completely unfulfilled, you know, just still not feeling happy, connected, joyous. I found myself just very lost in this whole modality in the way that I was living. And so that led me to asking some bigger questions around that age. So like I said, when I was around 32, and one of the big clinches that occurred was, you know, I was a surfer. I was an everyday surfer back then. All I wanted to do was go on my dream trip to the Mentawais and surf with my friends and, you know, spend time jumping in and out of boats and surfing some of the world's best waves. And when I went on this trip the whole time, man, all I wanted to do was lie on the boat and sleep. Like I felt really almost unwell, like just this whole detachment kind of thing came up. And that's where it first clicked for me, that it was like, man, you're chasing all these dreams, all these goals, all these things that you think is success, happiness, and fulfillment. Yet every time you move towards it or hit it or get it, nothing changes, nothing shifts. And so that led me down the path to start investigating, well, what's actually wrong here? You know, like, am I depressed? Is there something that's actually missing? Is there a fundamental flaw in myself that I need to go and address? And so through that, I was introduced to personal development work. And I'm an engineer by trade, aerospace engineer. Anything around personal development up until that point, I'll be honest, like I laughed at it. I just didn't understand. It wasn't logical enough. It wasn't scripted in ones and zeros, and it wasn't in a textbook. So I was like, well, it's not real. And so I, you know, at 32, when I kind of had this, not epiphany, but kind of hit, I would say, my rock bottom, like I just wasn't a happy person. I started down this line, like trying to understand what is happiness. One thing led to another. And you know, over the past 11 years, man, like I'm just completely transformed my life and who I am and how I see the world and how I show up.
And here's Ali Terai, episode 21. You had all of these advantages and you were able to play the system and you're doing really well. What was the moment that made you realize, oh, I don't want to keep doing this?
It wasn't like a specific moment, but there was a few little bits and pieces. I remember we had one meeting, which would happen just once a month, and the meeting would only go for an hour. But by the end of my career, I just remember that meeting being something that I just always wanted to avoid, like, you know, as much as I could. And then to me, that was a signal. I'm like, this is now something where 2-3 years ago, I didn't really mind it. At times, I think at the beginning, I would have been even nervous to attend that meeting and, you know, speak up in it. And it became one of those things where that meeting became something that, yeah, it was like just something that I didn't want to participate in. And to me, these are little checkpoints, is I could now see that what aspects of this, other than call it the salary or the title or whatever it is, am I actually into, that I'd still love to do, even if they weren't connected to all of these, call it benefits that I receive. Like, which parts of the game do I actually enjoy playing? And will I enjoy playing longer term? And it probably just got to the point where just that list of items became less. But on paper, this was the really tricky thing for me at that point, is on paper, as a job, as a standalone job that I was doing, it's a 9.5 out of 10, if not a 10 out of 10 in terms of a role. Like, I couldn't think. So it was really difficult, nearly decision and choices to make to start thinking about the next step when you're already in something that's very good and that doesn't really make sense to a lot of people while you'd look at leaving it. You know, so that was quite a challenge. And, you know, especially when you've got a young child and you're trying to explain it to your wife that, hey, you know, this is, I think that I can see the end point coming closer and closer here, but it's still very awesome. And it provides us with so much, but I'm now thinking about this imaginary golf club as a potential avenue. Like, what do we think? I think, like with most things in life, I'm a big fan. You just sort of back yourself in, see where it lands. And worst case scenario is, I'm just a big believer that most things are quite reversible. You know, like that whole thing of leaving a job, when I really broke it down, it's like, okay, well, if I don't have this job, will I ever be able to get another job again? Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. You know, so once I got comfortable with that, will it be the exact same job? Maybe not. Like, that's the risk that I'm taking, but I might not be able to get a 10 out of 10 gig. But say if I go down this path and it doesn't work, I think within 2-3 years, I should be able to get myself an 8 or a 9 out of 10, all things considered, just based on what I was able to previously execute.
Yeah. Okay.
So I had a little bit of confidence there.
So if you were enjoying the salaried corporate organization role, yeah, why so many side hustles as you were going through it?
Yeah, because it's still, there was parts of that, because the salary and the benefits were one component of it. But I go back to the learning journey and then, you know, just the dynamics of, call it innovation, opportunities to create. Like, I think I always had this inner desire that I wanted to go start something myself and really execute a vision start to finish. That was, yeah, more mine and more passion aligned as well. Like, I love that space, but it wasn't like the space that I was really, really passionate about. Like, I love education, love higher ed, and, you know, I think it's an awesome industry, but it's not up there with, say, something like golf, where, like, that's something that I probably wanted to do with a lot more of my time, even at that point.
Okay. And so you started Future Golf, if my memory serves me correctly, probably a few years before you ended up leaving corporate.
Yep.
And then this was just this small thing you're kind of nurturing on the side.
Yeah, very small. Like, I'm talking maybe an hour or two worth of time allocated to it for the first few years, you know, like during the day, if I'd call it. And then as it kept building, because for me, it was like, I just wanted to sit, like, I think deep down in my head, I thought we'd launch this thing. I'd learn how to set up a website and a community, maybe get a little bit of experience and then just go back to normal life, right? Like, what's the odds of it actually turning into anything? And I probably had that mindset on it for the first 3 years, 3-4 years, where it's like, okay, well, I know that I love this and I'm happy to do it even if it's me and 10 of my mates. So it didn't really matter too much. And I'm like, okay, we're reading books, learning stuff. We're then testing these things real time. And it was actually really valuable in my day job because I was learning so many more skills than I would have from an MBA. Like I was reading 3-4 books a week, you know, on marketing, on leadership, on negotiation and all these things. And I was executing all of them in my role. I'm like, wow, there's something powerful in this, like actually re-educating myself and going down that path and then seeing how it actually impacts results and what can then turn into. So yeah, it was funny. Like Future Golf is just this thing that was happening kind of in the background that we loved. And there was a few people that I had around me that were really, you know, close mates. And we're just building this thing for a bit of fun. And to me, it was never going to be an actual thing. You know, it was always going to be the thing that we learned about business. Like I always viewed it as like the MBA equivalent. And then maybe one day in 4 or 5 years, I'll go and start a real business. You know, and it was because it never made sense. It's like, surely this can't actually become as like something.
And here's Andre Menezes from episode 24.
There are probably quite a few people who are listening to this who have done well in their careers, for example, and they've gone to the point where they could potentially go and start up their own business, or they could go into a startup, or they can kind of step out of the traditional career-focused path. And they're probably thinking, crap, firstly, okay, great. I'm hearing Andre talk about, don't worry about so much about the fear. There are always other alternatives. The worst case isn't that bad necessarily. But it sounds like there's a lot more to it and they don't want to take that step forward without knowing that they're actually going to be better off. And the other part, which I heard you share, which I really want you to dive deeper into, is this idea which you got from your mother, and it sounds like other role models as well, of don't be so worried about what other people end up saying and other people end up thinking or what the normal way of doing things is. If you want something to change, then you got to make sure you change. So what would you say to someone like that who's listening? They've done really well in their career and they're like, I've got to take another step forward. I can't stay here. It's killing me. What would you
say? That happens so much. It's very funny, actually. So many very successful people, I mean, different levels of their careers, but like I'm talking about CEOs of listed companies who went to become a super high level at their 40s, like, you know, super successful financially and you know, in terms of their reputation professionally. Some of them are my friends that, you know, I have made friends over my career in those companies or others in just circles. And that question comes so much because most of those folks, super highly successful, they have had a life in which they were growing within that organization and then they locked themselves into it and they learn and leave that reality for X years, right? And that's all they know, and that's all they feel they know what to do and how to do. And they don't really have a clear sense of what's out there. They haven't been exposed, they haven't tried to be out there, they haven't tried to get out of their known environment because it's always been so good and they have been growing, they did great, right? So why would they? And they haven't. But then they might reach a stage in which the company maybe restructures or they're tired or whatever. And then they get to the stage and ask exactly the question you said. So, and they come and ask me, oh, how did you decide to do that? And how was it? And, you know, I'm trying to look for something else, but this is, and at times what I would say, what I do say to them most of the times is like, just take the leap. And what I incentivize them is to do what I just described to you and say like, look, what's the worst case scenario? If you jump out and you don't find a job immediately, what's the worst case scenario? Like, are you serious? What are you afraid of? I mean, I know you are financially sound. I know you have access and you live in great countries and you're not depending on a visa to move out, right? I know you're healthy. I know you have a reserves. What are you afraid of? In the worst case scenario, take a year sabbatical, go back to doing whatever you were doing for the life and you're going to learn so much and move on, right? That's the worst case scenario. How does that sound to you? And then they start thinking and usually what I hear back is that people saying, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm over-rationalizing it and afraid. And I'm just afraid of taking the leap because of exactly what I just said. People are usually only ready to take the leap once they have found the next step. But to me, what happens when you take that approach is that you are restricting your next move based on the context and framework in which you are living, which is probably the worst thing you can do, if you get what I mean. Even when I decided to interrupt my career, you know, I was running a company, it was a very successful career, extremely young, rose to the highest levels, and then I had no reason to stop, right? And then I decided to quit. My parents, my brother, like my father and my brother were like, and many friends were like, are you crazy? Why are you going to quit without finding something else? You're employed, you're going to find something even greater and you have a name, a reputation. I was like, that's not what I want. I'm not seeking for a job. I want to stop. I want to have full clarity. I want to be in nature because that's where I get my inspiration from. I want to be at the mountains, lakes, sea, whatever, and think about it with a clear mind, no framework, no restriction on what I want to do next. Usually you need less than what you think you need. Usually you can, you know, leave and do stuff. And maybe it's not a sabbatical, like, you know, going to be a year out. Maybe it's just allow yourself to jump out and allow yourself to have that year to figure out what to do next. Even if that year becomes 6 months after a while, you found out something interesting. That to me is something that could work, that I would consider if I were in that position. But it's tough. I mean, I don't want to be, I mean, each one knows its own shoes and story and trajectory. I don't want to sound like I know exactly what to do in those cases because I just don't. I what I know is what I've done and I never regretted it. You know, and those things were pivotal moments of my life when I took those such decisions. Those I can share about.
Here's Jeffrey Wong, episode 37.
More than just, you know, the Epicurean worldview, which is, you know, pain minimization and pleasure maximization, right? I think it's more about finding that fulfillment in life and also doing so for others. So, you know, when I came to that realization that I've been pursuing all the wrong things, it completely changed my worldview, it completely changed my outlook. And interestingly, it completely changed how much I suffered as a result of that. You know, pursuing happiness, pursuing, you know, money or fame or power or any of the conventional stuff has actually led to very much an empty existence, even when I was seemingly successful at it. It's only when I realized that what I needed to do was, and what ultimately fulfills me is seeking that meaning. And what I mean by that, you know, in a more basic sense is knowing that I'm, you know, making other people's lives better. And part of that is allowing them to understand, helping them to come to the same realization I did around what life is all about.
I'm really curious about that. About the situation or the circumstance or the context of when you had that friend or peer tell you you're at your best when you're helping others. What led to that insight?
Well, part of the exercise I was doing was the values inventory, and the other part is a survey that I had to send out to my friend. Now, why I was doing it was because the company was going through a restructure at the time. And at the time, it was a low point in my career. I felt like I was just wasn't going anywhere. And as I found out later, I had a completely misaligned leadership to where I was. But that exercise actually gave me the clarity I need to made me realize that I was completely misaligned to, you know, my values to their values, and I was in the wrong place, and hence my complete dissatisfaction from where I was. So at the time I had very little confidence as well. So I didn't feel like I had an option, you know, if I was to lose a job, I didn't feel like I could land anywhere. So incredibly frustrated. And so that's why I underwent this exercise, and, you know, but it was probably one of the best things that happened because once I knew what was important to me, then I knew where to aim my efforts and where I went. But also knowing that career wasn't important to me allowed me the courage to kind of put it on the line and, you know, perform some pretty career limiting moves in pursuit of my advocacy, you know, which is what sort of led me to that advocacy thought. And the second thing that happened was also the birth of my first child, because there was a point where I realized I can't look him in his face and realize that he's going to face the same limitations I faced. Because if I did nothing, you know, nothing's going to get better. Nothing's going to change.
And that's when I realized that, you know what, if I don't like the way things are, then I need to do something about it. Because if I don't, I can't look at my son in the face and say, you know, hey, sorry, mate, you know, you're just going to have to suffer the same thing I did.
He is Andre Alfonso from episode 42.
Forum, the business that I was the managing director for Forum in Australia. I went to my boss, who was the president of the company. It's a Forum here was a global management consulting company. And we had looked at the strategy of going into India, and I'd written a strategy document. But this is 2008 when, you know, the GFC was just starting to emerge. And the company said, we're not going to invest any money in India. And I kind of thought to myself, here's the opportunity. I'm going to do it. I'm going to, remortgage our house, which was paid off. And let's go up and start a business in India. Because it just seems the right thing to do. That was a leap of faith. That was a massive leap of faith, but it just seemed absolutely right. And my wife, we'd actually been on a holiday a year before, just for a couple of weeks, said to me on the way back the year before, is that I could live here. I love there's something about this which is magical. So when the opportunity came up, I'll remember the date. I was going out for a walk in the morning. And I had a career conversation coming up with my boss on the phone. It was morning, the evening in Boston. And I was sort of thinking, you know, the options that were in front of me was go to Singapore and run the region, go to the US and run a region. And I thought, you know, it didn't quite. And then all of a sudden this idea emerged from nowhere. It wasn't even something. And the idea was, well, why don't I set up India? Out of my own coin, my own investment, and we'll set it up as a distributor, use the brand Forum, but it will be my business and I will own it. And I came home and Kathy was asleep, and I went and got on the conference call. I went up and I spoke to my boss and I said, he said, well, what have we thought, you know, Singapore or the US? And I said, neither. I said, how about I do this? How about I go to India, set it up? I'd already had a replacement for me here in Australia to take over from my role because we had our succession planning. So I said to him, you know, why don't I go set up the business in India because you've always wanted to be there, and we'll set up as a distributor. And he said, wow, where'd that come from? I said, I don't know. he said, that's a great idea. And by the end of the day, give me a one page strategy on what you want to do. And I said, first thing I'm going to do is go and ask my wife. And he goes, haven't you asked? I said, no, literally the idea just came up. So I walked back in to the house. Kathy was having a coffee. And I said, hey, I just had a meeting with Ed, my CEO. And I put the point to him about us going to India and setting up a business and living there. And we would invest and be our business. What do you reckon? And she looked at me. And within 30 seconds, she said, yes. 30 seconds. Boom. And it was one of those moments that I look back and I still get a shiver off my spine because it happened so naturally and so quick. And we were there in a few months, no business, hanging up our shingle, trying to get business to come in the door, trying to get a team together, struggling to make ends meet. But it was the best time. And our kids were in school, English school, English speaking school. International school, I should say. And 4 years, the best, most magical experience I've had. For me, it was very different. It was all about identity and feeling like I returned to the country of my birth and I fitted in. For Kathy, it was a discovery of, you know, spirituality, yoga and mindfulness and meditation that she ended up going into ashrams and stuff like that. For the kids, they made long-lasting friendships in India, which they still have to this day. And it was great. So what happened then is because Forum became really successful, I got approached by some of these other consulting companies in the US saying, hey, Andre, we heard that. Would you be interested in distributing for us? And there were a couple of organizations that I aligned myself with. One was Ariel, and they do, so I'm still the director of Ariel in Australia now. So when I came back to Australia, they asked me if I would set up Australia for them and my business partner who used to be with me at Forum, and we set up Ariel here. And Ariel is all about using actors to teach communication skills. So we have a group of facilitators that work with us that go out there. They all come from a theater background. When you use the, you know, arguably the profession with the best communication skills are actors. What they learn, and these are professional actors, not self-taught, but people, what they learn in acting school about voice and body and, you know, finding the emotion within yourself and all those sorts of things, we teach into business. Right. And that's kind of that was the shift away from forum to doing that over here, and loved it, loved that whole idea because it was so unusual and different. And I learned a lot personally because I had to go through it.
Here's Nick Langton, episode 46. So you were at BT for a while?
Yeah, I was at BT for a while. My wife and I got married. She was working at BZW, which became ABN AMRO. So we both working in financial services or financial markets. And then we had 12 months off after we got married to travel because we were going to originally travel straight after uni, and then we kind of got good jobs and then wasn't sure what the travel timeline would be, and it ended up kind of, you know, 5 years later, we ended up doing it after we got married. So we did take 12 months off. We traveled probably Europe for 9 months, hired a car and just like literally drove everywhere, like put 25,000 Ks on that thing in 9 months. And then we came back, we were back home in Australia for 3 weeks, whole bunch of weddings and different things with friends. And then we went off to Canada for a ski season. And that was a little bit truncated because I had a big accident and had to come home early for surgery. But yeah, we kind of had a full 12-month break out of our careers. And that was, you know, that was, yeah, I mean, that was cherished kind of time. That was really amazing.
Was this early 2000s?
Yeah, March 01. And we were kind of back April 02.
What did you learn from that time off? Because most people would be like, that's impossible to take that much time. No way you can take that much time off your career and your growth. What was some of the challenges that you were facing to try and make that decision? And then how did you end up deciding? And then what are some of the learnings that you got from it?
Yeah. Look, I think we started with a view that we would probably do some kind of working holiday as well. So we went and got all the right work visas for London. So if we wanted to spend some time living in London and apply for, you know, we didn't want to do kind of basic jobs in London. We thought if we're going to go and work there, we might as well, you know, get back into financial services. So that was a kind of a part plan, maybe some optionality.
Sure.
There. We wanted to actually have a bit of a holiday first. And then there was probably a point in the trip, maybe 2 months in, 2.5 months in, when it was the first time that now we'd got through everything in the first 2.5 months of the travel agenda, every event we wanted to go to, every town we'd wanted to be at a certain date, whatever. And that was the first time we kind of breathed and sort of thought, okay, so what do we do with the next, you know, 5.5 months or whatever the case may be? And that was probably the first moment about this is actually a big career break. And, you know, having been recently married, just starting to talk about, you know, what do we think the next phase of our life looks like. So I definitely think my backpacker experience was a lot better because we were a bit older and we had a bit more money and just maybe a little bit more purpose.
Before kids, right?
Yep. Yeah, well before kids.
And so you got back and then you ended up, you'd had all these conversations about what you're going to do with your career and where you're going to be focused.
Yep.
Was there a clear shift for you? Or did you decide to continue to be focused in the same direction?
No, continue to be focused in the same direction. So kind of came back and tapped into my network and got an opportunity, you know, at a new company, got a great opportunity again working in kind of asset management and platform sales, which, you know, that's where I'd sort of been. And that's when I first started working around wealth advisory and financial advice and those elements. So it was more kind of come back and I've kind of picked up where I left off, and now I've got a great growth path in a new company. And similarly, you know, my wife came back, you know, started a job with a great boutique investment bank, and then sort of started her career towards portfolio management. So we both kind of came back and I suppose kind of picked up where we left off and kept that sort of trajectory going. And then that was the phase of life, Harry, that's more sort of okay now, where we're buying a house, we're thinking about starting a family, that kind of thing.
So I hope you received a whole lot of value from engaging in that conversation. What were the key takeaways for you? What can you schedule in your life right now to make sure that the time you just invested into listening to this exceptional conversation with this amazing mentor and this amazing individual is time that wasn't misused, but was time that you've allocated properly to enhancing your life and improving it? Whatever it is, schedule it now, practice it now, be the successful person you're meant to be. Live with purpose.